Welcome into a Saturday edition of Locked On Knicks. Lost to the Timberwolves last night, 115-104. Started off pretty good, though, but down the stretch, we got a heavy dose of Emmanuel Boudier making his return. Notice I said Boudier because it was not all that pretty.
And then a couple of bright spots in two young guards, Alonzo Trier, another excellent effort, 20 points on 11 shots. And Damian Dotson, Michael Jordan the first quarter, Damian Dotson for the last three.
And then lastly, we'll just do some final housekeeping items on what ultimately was kind of an ugly game. So all that coming up and more next on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Knox foul from behind, counting at one. As Fisdale pumps his fist.
What he does is contagious.
Robinson with a catch and slam. Across the lane to Trier. Trier drives down.
Becomes infectious.
Welcome back in, everybody, to Locked On Knicks. We're getting rolling. Alex Wolf, Gavin Shaw, talking about what was ultimately not a great game, I guess. I don't know. It was a great first quarter. The Knicks had a lead after the first quarter, which is, you know, not something that they're used to, 33-29 over the Timberwolves. Damian Dotson had 18 of those points, which was just insane. He came out as a noted terrible basketball analyst Wally Szczerbiak might say he was a flamethrower in the first quarter, 18 points, and just couldn't miss. I think he had five threes in that time to go with that whole stat line. And then, after that, it was just kind of business as usual. The Knicks blew the lead away going into the half, and then, you know, just kind of faltered down the stretch. Probably the biggest story, at least to me, Gavin, was that Emmanuel Mudiay came back. Fizdale said, you know, he kind of warned us like it was going to be a big Mudiay game in his pregame comments. He said, you know, yeah, we're bringing, you know, Emmanuel's back. We're going to have him play big minutes, blah, blah, blah. And he certainly played big minutes to the tune of 26 minutes. He outplayed Dennis Smith by 5 minutes in the game. And he certainly did not outplay him on the court. At least I didn't think so.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't think. I know you were kind of telling me pre-show you thought DSJ had a pretty good game. I didn't think, or I mean, at least like decent. I didn't think either of them were very good. I did actually like kind of, even though he ended up like the final shooting numbers were obviously atrocious for Mudiay. I did kind of like the energy he brought to the table, finished with 6 rebounds, 3 steals, was pretty proactive defensively, at least in spurts, was like pretty like adamant about getting to the basket, went 2 for 4 from 3. So there were elements I liked there for Mudiay, but again, I mean, I'm a proponent of, and I get with Kadeem Allen, there's like a finite amount of time that they can keep him up on the big boy roster. But I mean, I didn't really like need to see any more from him this season. Like I'm sort of just like, all right, just like kind of figure out what you have in DSJ. So even though I sort of thought for stretches Mudiay might have been the better option just with the energy he brought, while I thought Smith was, and maybe this is kind of unfair, was like a little bit lethargic, was sort of late making decisions, had 5 turnovers in only 22 minutes, which is pretty inexcusable. I'm still like, even like saying all that, like I don't get why Mudiay is playing more minutes than DSJ, and I get Fizdale's logic is, all right, you know, whoever I think is playing better is going to play. They're both young guards. We're not necessarily decided on which one we're going to potentially keep long-term, even though Mudiay is obviously a little out of control with them, out of their control with him being a free agent. But I just think that rationale is wrong, and I think Smith is pretty clearly the guy to invest in. So I guess that would be my frustration, even though I wouldn't necessarily agree with your assertion that Smith was clearly a better player today.
I don't know. To my eye, I mean, Mudiay fell right into the same trappings that he always falls into. I wanted to offer a quick nugget of information on Kadeem Allen that I learned yesterday. I don't know if you knew this. I don't know if many people knew this. I feel like it was weird. Just kind of one of those weird things we wouldn't really think about. Ian Bagley of ESPN tweeted out something to the effect of that the Knicks might keep Allen down in Westchester for a little bit right now because Westchester Knicks are making a like a playoff push and all that. But the other interesting nugget was apparently since Kadeem Allen was signed midseason, I guess his NBA service days are prorated. So apparently he can only have like 20-something NBA service days versus 45 that you normally get on a two-way deal. So we might not see him again until like the end of the season based off of that, because he definitely is already used, like, if I had to guess. I mean, I know they're pretty lenient with what like NBA service days count as, but he's probably already used at least 10 if I had to guess. So we might not see him for a couple more weeks now. But to get off that aside and get back to Moutier, I don't know. I didn't like it. I understand where you're coming from with like the energy that he brought. Like, it definitely seemed like he was excited to be back out there, but he fell into so many of the same bad habits that you see from him on his worst days. Like, he made a couple flashy layups, which, you know, is kind of him at his best. And that part was good, but otherwise you got, you know, some ugly mid-range pull-ups. He airballed like two or three three-pointers, and he airballed a mid-range shot at one point, which was just atrocious. Which of course is rust, but like, I just don't know how Fizdale was watching what he was doing and was like, oh yeah, this is the way to go. This is like, I guess it was just, he was just like thrilled to have Moutier back or something, because the play didn't really speak to me. Yeah. And you know, he had one assist versus four turnovers. And the biggest difference to me was Smith had five turnovers, but he at least had seven assists also.
Yeah.
And he was shooting pretty efficiently. He was 3-6 shooting for 7 points. And I mean, he also, if you want to talk about tone setting, had one of like the top two or three Knicks dunks of the year in this game with the like straightaway tomahawk that he threw down in the first quarter, which was thrilling to say the least. but yeah, I don't know. It was annoying to me. I didn't really find too much to enjoy about how Moutier played tonight. He even managed to screw up a lob to Mitch Robinson, which I didn't think was possible. Like, because you throw it anywhere within about 5 feet of the hoop and he can usually put it in. But he managed to screw that up too. I thought this was definitely like undeniably a Moutier game, and like a pretty wide margin there as far as Moutier versus Moutier today.
Yeah, Mitch missed two different alley-oop dunks. I mean, you could argue the first one was on like Mitch because he tried to catch it and like jam it with one hand, and it was like a little bit difficult. The second one was just like, that was just like a terrible pass. And I think it was almost like Moody in his head seeing like, okay, I've literally never seen this guy miss a lob. Like, I could throw this anywhere within his vicinity and he's going to get it. And instead he like put it over the backboard, and Mitch was like, all right, even that's like a little ambitious for me. But yeah, I don't know. You convinced me a little bit. I mean, the 7-1 assists is certainly a big deal. But I wasn't like, outside of the dunk, which was obviously awesome, I just wasn't like enthused by either one's performance tonight. I just think Smith, like, and this is something that I especially in the first two or three games he played, I was actually a big advocate of him, and I thought he was doing a surprisingly good job of this. But the decision making with him, I think, just has to be so much quicker, because there was too much time of him just like dribbling the air out of the basketball. And that's certainly not an area where Moutier is any better, so I'm not making a direct comparison there, but I'm just saying, like, Smith, for him to reach his ceiling and to be a starting point guard in the NBA, that like can't happen. Like, if you're going to be dribbling, you have to be probing, you have to be like trying to do like the little Nash dribble thing where you circle around the bucket and draw all the eyes of the defense and maybe open up a little window for someone to cut to the hoop. And I mean, if we want to transition a little bit here, or maybe, I don't know, Alex, we should save this for our second segment, but Damian Dotson, even though he didn't shoot very well after the first quarter, I thought he did a better job than either point guard of kind of attacking a defense that was keen on rushing out at him, splitting defenders and kicking it out to guys on the outside. And I know Smith picked up some assists in the pick and roll, but I just don't think he was getting the offense moving the same way. It was kind of an all or nothing proposition with him. And this is kind of a phenomenon you see with so many young point guards, where they pick up pretty good assist numbers, but it's because the only times they pass the ball are when they're sure that it's going to result in an assist. And I like the Dotson school more of getting into the lane, drawing some eyes and kicking off a sequence that might not directly result in an assist, but could get you a hockey assist or a secondary hockey assist and just gets the ball moving around the perimeter. So I guess that was my main issue with Smith's game tonight.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's totally fair. And like, you know, I want to go back and rewatch it, and I'm sure that I would see some of those same things that you're talking about. But I guess also to your earlier point, it's just there's definitely more to Dennis Smith than there is to Emmanuel Mudiay at this point. Plus adding in their contract situations too. I don't understand. Like I sincerely hope, and I'm for sure that I'm going to be disappointed here, but I sincerely hope that Fizdale does not ever play Mudiay more minutes than Dennis Smith Jr. ever again in a game after this one. But I'm like, sure, based off of Fizdale's like huge irrational love for Emmanuel Mudiay, that Mudiay is probably going to lead this team in total minutes played for a number of games the rest of the year, because he just freaking loves Mudiay for some reason. So I guess we'll see. I don't know. I definitely think, you know, Smith, and we've talked about this already, like from the second Smith got here, Smith is like a better version of everything that Mudiay gives you, essentially, except for the length. But like his defense is better, his offense is better, his finishing is better. There's not a single thing that Emmanuel Mudiay does that Dennis Smith Jr. can't theoretically do better. So I just wish they would invest the time and resources more in DSJ than they do to Mudiay as far as getting this all figured out. But I guess we'll see. Anyway, we should probably wrap this up, because I don't really like Mudiay the basketball player, but he doesn't seem like a bad kid. I feel bad shitting on him for, you know, 10 minutes a show every time that he plays. But I mean, whatever. So we'll wrap this one up and we'll come back. We'll talk about the bright spots, Damian Dotson and Alonzo Trier, when we come back to Locked On Knicks.
Welcome back into Locked On Knicks. Before we get back to the podcast, just an important reminder: when you get in your car, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Knicks. You can also do that when you're at home. If you're like the 80% of New Yorkers that primarily travel through public transportation, you can tell whoever your MTA service provider is to play Locked On Knicks. And please respond to us on Twitter or via email and let us know how they react to that. All right, so it was a 115-104 victory for the Minnesota Timberwolves over the New York Knicks. We were searching far and wide for bright spots, and there were two pretty clear ones. Damian Dotson, just another electric first quarter, and Alonzo Trier, really just generally an awesome offensive game, at least. But let's start off with Dotson, because this is the second time he's done this. I think it was the Sixers game where he had like 15 in the first quarter, and that game he didn't make another shot the rest of the way. This time he made one more, starting off 5 for 5 from three, I think like about 5 for 6 or 5 for 7 from the field, finishing 7 of 16, 5 for 9. So obviously a disappointing end for Dotson, but he's shown at the beginning of games where defenses are maybe a little bit lax, he's not necessarily the first guy on the scouting report, which maybe could change going forward, at least in the first quarters. He has this ability to just absolutely go off when he's in rhythm. And we spent that whole Fan Friday podcast talking about like, okay, ideally he would be Danny Green, but he's not Danny Green. He looked, at least shooting the ball, he looked like Danny Green in that first quarter.
Yeah, in the first quarter, he was looking like my more lofty projection of Raja Bell. You know, he was killing it, man. He couldn't miss. But, you know, just going down the stretch, he obviously petered out. I think that's just the biggest issue with Dotson. And we were kind of talking about that the other day, about just consistency. You know, it's all just a matter of him being able to bring the same skill level through the whole game. And for whatever reason, he seems to operate as a streak shooter, despite the fact that, like, when you watch him, nothing about his game looks broken. Like, everything looks pretty fine tuned. You know what I mean? There's no hitch in his shot. Like, he has great form on his jumper. He tends to find his spots really well. To your point in the last segment, he, you know, just kind of operates within the offense, and he looks to get other people involved, and you know, it isn't really prioritizing himself ever. So, yeah, I don't know. It was a weird game for him, but that first quarter was like electric. You know, it was really exciting to watch. And I guess, like, if you know, asked me now to look back on it, like, I should have known better that, like, Damian Dotson scored 18 of the Knicks' 33 points that quarter. So they were, of course, like, due to regress a little bit for the rest of the game. But at the end of the first quarter, I was like, wow, this is probably one of the best quarters of basketball, at least first quarters, that I've seen the Knicks play in a while, because they just haven't. Well, I guess, I mean, the one right before the break was pretty good, too, against Atlanta when they came out so hot. But it was, you know, a pair, I guess, of really good first quarters in their last two games. Just unfortunately, in this one, they kind of got outclassed down the stretch.
Yeah, I'm going to posit something on Dotson, and I'm going to do the Bill Simmons thing that I actually hate when he does it and compare me and my scrub friends playing pickup basketball to NBA players. But I know personally, me and Damian Dotson, very, very similar games, kind of 3-and-D, pretty unselfish. And I've gone through stretches in my life where you're just like hitting everything and you make a few threes in a row and you just feel incredible about yourself. And then if I ever like just have a second to think about it, like it immediately goes away. Like the second you pause and you start thinking, like you just can't hit another shot because you're like, wait, how was I doing that? Like why was that possible? Like I shouldn't have been able to make that many shots. And again, Damian Dotson, professional athlete, probably working with a much larger reserve of self-confidence than I have possessed at any point in my life. But I do think there's a little something to that. And I wonder if maybe like a few seasons down the road, it's something where we'll see him get off to a start like that and then be able to carry it through the rest of the games. But then at this point, it's just like, if it like feels unsustainable mentally, it's going to be unsustainable in a game because it's so hard to keep shooting the ball like that. And I think I noticed it in the shot a little bit, and Clyde was commenting on it, where he looked like he started rushing and started pushing a little bit and was just trying to kind of guide the ball in with touch, while for like the first five shots, it was just like picture perfect form. Even when he was under duress from defenders chasing him from behind or contesting a shot in front of him. I will say to his credit, and this was something we mentioned last segment, but I think this is worth re-mentioning. Only had three assists, but there were so many times where he used the threat of his jumper to allow himself to be run off the line, let someone step up, and then swing a pass into the corner. And if he was operating with a better set of teammates or a better shooting set of teammates, I legitimately believe he could have had 7 or 8 assists tonight, or at least been the conductor of an offense that was a whole lot more effective than it was after the first quarter, because he really put the rest of the Knicks in good positions after that really hot start by him.
Yeah, he's just a really smart player. Like I very much enjoy watching Damian Dotson play basketball, because he just always seems to make that right read with situations like that. And, you know, the only time that I would say that he kind of frustrates me is occasionally when his shot isn't falling, he tries a little too hard to get it going. And I think that sort of happened to a degree, like you were saying, last night after he started off so hot, he started to feel like more of a burden was on him to like score the ball. And I think that might've gotten into his head a little bit, because with these Knicks, with the way that they play and, you know, the inconsistency that they play with as like a really young team, it's kind of just up to whoever gets hot any given night sometimes to be like the leading scorer for that night. So I think maybe he thought that was his role for today. But yeah, there wasn't really any particular like plays that stood out to me, but just the general flow of his game of letting it come to him in that first quarter was really nice to see and fun to watch. And like, unless you have more to add on Dotson, that was kind of what I saw from Trier today too, as far as, you know, just letting the game come to him and not forcing anything today, which was, you know, kind of a refreshing thing that's kind of becoming a trend for him again.
Yeah, 11 shots and 20 points. So you can't really ask for better efficiency than that. Obviously, the one assist kind of stands out, and that's still sort of what I'm looking for out of him. Like, can he continue to make his teammates better? And can he kind of continue to be a conductor of the offense, especially with, as you smartly pointed out last segment, we're not going to be seeing a whole lot more of Kadeem Allen for the foreseeable future. Obviously, we don't know exactly when Frank Ntilikina is going to be back. And I think because of that, Trier, in limited opportunity, he's going to have to find a way to calibrate his scoring and passing a little bit more, just because Smith and Moutier are just going to always, I mean, at least to some degree, be hunting for their own shot and be possessing the ball a lot. And I think in Trier, just with the type of player he is, that's going to trigger in him like, all right, I'm going to have the ball in my hands less. That means every time I get it, I'm going to have to find a way to score. And tonight, that sort of basketball looked really good, because he was hyper efficient, breaking guys down off the dribble, really aggressive in transition, and basically he played the best possible version of that game. But I guess what I would say to that is that level of shot making isn't going to be available to him every night. And though tonight was obviously, like, you can't question it, it was a great effort from him, I think he's going to have to find a way to split his time between shooting and passing a little bit more, just to have a healthier balance as a team. And that's not really fair to him, because I think ideally you would pair him with a pass first point guard and let him just be who he is. But because of that reality that he's playing next to Smith and Moody, I think he's just going to have to find a way to make more plays, because those two aren't going to do it with a high level of consistency, especially Moody.
Yeah, I was going to say, in particular, Moody is not going to look for him too much. I mean, I know that in some of the games before the break, Fizdale was having Trier and Smith play together for stretches, and that seemed to work pretty well, because Trier, you know, can bring the ball down the court every once in a while and, you know, initiate, and you know, Smith can play off the ball for a minute or whatever. And I don't know how much that would work with Moutier. Like, as limited as Dennis Smith Jr. is off the ball, I think Moutier is even more limited off the ball. But yeah, I agree with what you're saying, though. I mean, it sucks that he's kind of, Trier is being put in a position where he has to do any playmaking, because really, like, I think his ideal role going forward in the NBA is to be just kind of a microwave scorer, you know, come in off the bench and score some points, you know, break some guys down off the dribble, maybe get an assist here and there. But like, he's trusted with a lot more playmaking ability on this team than I think he should have to be. But it is what it is. I mean, last night definitely, like, you know, some of the positives that I was taking away personally before the break was that he was making some more catch and shoot opportunities and playing a little better off the ball. And that wasn't even really there last night. He was mostly doing his ISO thing, and it worked out really well, mostly because his 3-point shot was falling, which was keeping teams, like, really honest. He only shot 1-of-1 from three, but it seemed like they were respecting his 3-point shot a lot last night, because pretty much any time he was out on the perimeter, if he gave even a little bit of a head fake, they were biting and he was able to get into the lane. So, yeah, I guess my overarching point is I enjoyed watching him play, but I agree, there's, even in a good game like this for Trier, there's still things that you look at and can say, like, yeah, I think he needs to do this better. And in particular, I think it's just looking for ways to vary how he plays the game.
Yeah, I will say, just the sheer combination of his physical strength and explosiveness really stood out to me tonight on a Timberwolves team that doesn't, like, really have a lot of great defenders in the backcourt. But between Okogie and Wiggins and 45-year-old Luol Deng out there, they do have some strong guys who are pretty decent athletes on the whole. And, like, Trier's just ability to, like, be able to get those guys on his hip and then just sort of put his shoulder down and bully his way to the rim, it really stood out to me. And, like, I wonder, like, I'm genuinely not sure if there's even more room for him to grow physically and for him to bulk up even more and get even stronger and just really become, like, a beast. Because obviously he's already 22, so he's, like, sort of nearing the point of physical maturity. But I wonder if there's sort of another level for him to go up there. And I'm kind of interested to see the next season or two whether he can get even better in that capacity. I guess we're about ready to wrap up the positive segments. I do want to give a quick shout out to DeAndre Jordan. I feel like we never mentioned when he does anything well, just because we're obviously so in love with Mitch. And I would argue, even though tonight Jordan was quite a bit better in general, Mitch is still the far better option just because of what he brings defensively and Jordan's sort of inability or unwillingness to move a whole lot on the defensive end at this point in his career. But 16 points, 19 rebounds, 2 blocks on only 8 shots was one of the few Knicks. I think he was only one of 2 Knicks that had a positive plus minus when he was on the floor, and his +7 was far and away the leader of the team. So, and I know it was mostly just doing a pick and roll, and you could argue, like, it was Smith that was kind of creating most of his opportunities and they were sort of all automatic. I do want to give him a quick shout out because that's a pretty good game, and I feel like we never give Jordan any credit just because of the nature of his position.
Yeah, I agree. I was going to give him a quick shout out too, just for that performance. It was a very quiet 16 and 19. I'll give him that much. But it was a good performance. I mean, it was probably one of his best ones since he's been traded to the Knicks, but you know, it's so easy to just overlook what he does at this point because he's not doing anything flashy fashion like Mitch is, you know, with the crazy blocks and the alley-oop. I mean, he does some alley-oops, but they're a little more like thunder dunks rather than,
muted.
You know, Mitch's that are a little prettier. But, you know, it's and also he's, you know, 30 years old or 31 or whatever. And, you know, he's not like a kid that we're looking for all these positives and room for growth with. He kind of just is who he is. But it was definitely a solid game for him tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. With that, we will wrap up our second segment. We'll come back one final time. Hopefully, we'll keep it quick. We'll talk through some of the performances outside of the Boudier-Smith duo that brought us down a little bit on the night. That next on Locked On Knicks.
Welcome back in to our third and final segment, Locked On Knicks, following the Knicks 115-104 loss to the Minnesota Timberwolves. If you were only here for the positives, now's the time to probably turn it off, because now we got to get into some of the negatives. I would say that the first big negative that stood out to me, unfortunately, because I was hoping to see him be a little more revitalized coming out of the break, was Kevin Knox today. He played a team-high 38 minutes, shot 5 of 14 from the floor. One small positive, he did shoot 3 of 7 from three-point range and 5 of 5 from the line, so that's good. And he had 7 rebounds, but I don't know. Despite the fact that he was third on the team with 18 points in the scoring department, I just was not particularly encouraged by his play tonight. Particularly, the thing that stood out to me the most with him, you know, you could say whatever you want about his offense, and it was inconsistent, you know, whatever. He shot 36% for the night. But there were moments where his offense looked pretty good tonight. He was playing a little bit out of control going to the hoop, which is kind of his thing, but he's making his threes by and large, and he was looking pretty good in that respect. But defensively, he was pretty atrocious, I thought. The Knicks, when they were giving up the run in the second quarter to, you know, blow the lead that they had built in the first quarter, the biggest thing that happened was you got all these like old guy Timberwolves out there, like Anthony Tolliver, Luol Deng, Derrick Rose, and they were just all out there using basically like every old guy trick in the book. And the Knicks, and I think in particular Kevin Knox, and also Mitch Robinson, to be fair, were like just falling for every single one of them. Like every single head fake, it seemed like they were jumping for. And then these guys were getting them up in the air, drawing foul shots. I mean, they gave up. It was, what's the total free throw numbers here? Gave up 32 free throw attempts to the Timberwolves for the game. Rose had 8 of them. You had Tolliver with a couple, and Deng had 5 free throw attempts. I mean, so it was just kind of crazy, like the level to which the Knicks were just biting on everything. And I understand that, you know, they're young and have room for improvement, but I don't know about you, Gavin. To me, it was a pretty horrible defensive performance, particularly in that second quarter when they kind of, you know, blew the lead.
Yeah, I was really frustrated with Mitchell Robinson's defense on Anthony Tolliver. I know he blocked him a few times, but that actually made me even more frustrated, because with Tolliver, the scouting report is pretty evident, and it's been around for his whole career. I mean, you do everything humanly possible to run him off the three-point line, and if you're the type of athlete Mitchell Robinson is, even if he gets by you initially, you're going to be able to recover and get one of those big paws up there and block him from behind, which he did twice. But there were multiple times, like in the pick and roll, where Robinson sort of treated him like a traditional big, and like instead of like sprinting to stay with him or letting someone else take the point guard, and you could argue, like, I mean, this was a little bit on like whoever was guarding the ball just getting absolutely crushed by the pick as well, but he should have been sticking with Tolliver like glue, or if the strategy was to switch, then the point guard should have been sticking with Tolliver like glue. And instead, Anthony Tolliver went 4 for 5 from three and dropped a cool 16 spot on the Knicks. I actually have a great Anthony Tolliver story, but we can save it for the end of the pod, because I do want to harp on Kevin Knox a little bit more on both ends of the floor. Defensively is like the area like I think I'm the most concerned about him, and he, like, honestly, like this offseason, like I don't know if he has to go to P3 or just find the right trainer, but he has to totally change his body and like how I guess really like just the amount of power he can generate in his lower body, because defensively that is such an issue with him right now, and he's like one of the few guys in the NBA who, when he gets into a defensive stance, he just doesn't look all that athletic. Like his arms kind of hang by his sides, and he's not always engaged defensively. When I think at this level, that's just a prerequisite to even having a shot. And his length, like if he can get into that kind of shape and like commit to that level of intensity defensively, I think his length will eventually make him manageable on that end of the floor, which is good enough. If his offense can get to the level, I think both of us think it can. But right now, it's honestly just inexcusable. And it's like, and again, like he's super young, but it's tough to watch on a night-to-night basis.
Yeah, it sucks. I mean, there's no real like easy way to put it. And then unfortunately, I mean, I guess you could chalk some of it up to like lack of depth at the kind of like three spot that, you know, he plays at consistently, because really like his only guys that you could consider to be backups in any sort of way right now are, I guess, like Trier and Dotson and a little bit John Jenkins. But the playing 35 plus minutes every single night. I mean, I understand he's 19, you know, he's only 19, and, you know, he's gonna, you know, be okay with playing that probably. Like he might get a little sore or whatever, but like, you know, he's young, so he shouldn't get super, super tired at that. And it's good for his conditioning. But I think that plays part into it, is that Fizdale, in addition to playing him those huge minutes, doesn't even necessarily like stagger those minutes. He kind of just plays Knox for like 12 minute chunks at a time most of the time. And that's, I don't know, I feel like that's not great for his like already limited defensive ability. Once he starts having to conserve energy and stuff, that's what he's going to take the energy off of, is his defensive effort. And I think that shows through a lot of nights. But I don't know. I'm pretty much done talking about him. I want to briefly touch on Luke Kornet, because it breaks my heart, but Luke Kornet is fucking terrible these days. Like, he's just been so bad. Yeah. And he played so good when he first, you know, started coming on. But, man, he cannot hit a shot these days, you know? And I don't know what's gotten into him, but, like, that like, beautiful, pure three-point stroke that he had for, you know, a while there has just like completely evaporated. Like I know it's not the case, but it feels like he hasn't made a three pointer in like a month at this point, because it's bad. And the unfortunate part with him is that if he's not hitting those three pointers, he's not all that useful out there, particularly when they're playing him in these two big sets like they are, because he's not mobile enough to be like a quote unquote power forward. So, you know, having him out there with like DeAndre Jordan, it's not a great look. I mean, you can maybe pull off putting him out there with Mitch Robinson, because Mitch is a little more mobile. But yeah, Luke Kornet's like, maybe it's just lineup construction. It's also definitely that he's in a slump, but like something needs to change sooner than later, because he's becoming almost unplayable at this point. And, you know, obviously he was barely played last night and only got, you know, 10 and a half minutes. But I don't know about you, Gavin, but it's like, I think the best word I can come up with is sad. It's like, it's sad, because I was getting pretty high on the kid, and it's all just kind of come crashing down to earth again.
Yeah. Seven games in February so far, shooting 29% on 5.4 3-point attempts per game. And the real indictment is his overall field goal percentage is actually somehow lower than his 3-point percentage. And I think you kind of saw why tonight. I can't remember if it was just a pick and roll or just in kind of the natural flow of the defense, but Minnesota switched Jeff Teague onto him, and he sort of posted up underneath the basket. And my immediate thought was, okay, this is going to end with him missing a turnaround jumper, because that's what he always does when he has a smaller player on him. And he actually like tried to drop step and get to the bucket, but he didn't bring the ball above his head before he did it. So Teague just stripped him. And like at that point I was like, all right, like you're just not an NBA player. Like you have to be able to score in that situation. If you're a 7-footer in the NBA and you have a guy literally a foot shorter than you guarding you. And I'm with you too. Like, I think and this was sort of always the reality we were operating with him. Either he's a 40% 3-point shooter or he's not an NBA player. Like that's kind of the dichotomy with him. And that's always going to be the case. One final point on Knox. I know we went off him, but I wanted to mention this quickly. I would be interested next season if the Knicks do get some star players and he's operating in a far more open floor and playing less minutes, I think that combination would be really, really good for him, because I just see at this point in the season, like, unless he's like working in like a pick and roll, like if you just ask him to go one-on-one, he just has this utter inability to break guys down off the dribble. Like if you threw like Trier's one-on-one skills into his game, like he would have been like legitimately worth like a top three pick in last year's draft. But right now that part of his offense is just utterly absent. And I think it's a combination of lack of floor spacing and the fact that he just really hasn't developed a whole lot of moves yet. And it's probably because he hasn't really had to at this point in his career. But that's a combination of getting into much better physical shape, getting a lot more explosive, playing less minutes, and kind of working in a more open floor. So I'm wondering if Knox has that potential to the point that you made in the past, Alex, that makes me interested in him potentially working with like a Carmelo Anthony type guy who could maybe teach him like a jab series or two. That would be sort of helpful with him. Hopefully it ends with him getting to the bucket instead of taking a stupid pull up. But I do still have high hopes for Knox. I just think that's kind of the area he has to work on the most. And then Alex, if you want to kind of finish us off, I think the last guy who had sort of a disappointing game was Mitchell Robinson, scoreless in 13 minutes, just 2 rebounds, 1 assist. Did have his traditional 3 blocks, but sort of a comeback of the bad Mitch in that he had 4 fouls in just 13 minutes of play.
Yeah, well, and you kind of already alluded to what was causing that, and that was that, you know, he was getting frustrated. He was having a bad game, and I think it kind of got into his head a little bit because he got a couple early fouls. And he was like frustrated, like visibly frustrated when he got taken out of the game at one point, because he just was not being effective. And, you know, I guess it's just going to be a learning experience for him. I don't think he just like instantly regressed over the All-Star break and is all of a sudden, you know, back to being the same guy that, you know, couldn't stay on the floor for more than 10 minutes at a clip. But yeah, he just had a bad game. That's all I really think with him. I'm not reading too much into his performance because we saw so much good right before the break. And I mean, there was still even positives to take away from this one. Like you said, you know, where the possessions that he actually defended Tolliver, who was the guy who just gave him the most fits out of anybody today, like without a doubt, the possessions that he actually defended him correctly and, you know, smothered him at the 3-point line, made him try to beat him off the dribble, and then used his length to, you know, impose himself on Tolliver, was definitely his best possessions. So I can't even bring myself, like, it's not like what we saw from Mitch today has been a habit lately in any way, like where we bring stuff up with Moutier or with Knox or any of the other younger guys like that, where we kind of bring up stuff that is happening consistently. This hopefully seems like an anomaly game for Mitch Robinson, and he should hopefully get back to doing what he does by next game, if I had to guess. But I don't know. That's my overall take. I didn't want to read too much into it, you know, and I'm willing to just write this one off for Mitch, because I didn't think it was something that's going to be indicative of what we see out of him going forward.
Yeah, I'm 100% in agreement with you. I mean, I think he's a young player. He was sort of due for a bad game. He just ripped off like 6 or 7 in a row. So let's see how he bounces back. I have a feeling it's going to be pretty good. I will say my one area of concern for him has sort of nothing to do with him, but I think not getting to play with someone like Kadeem Allen could hurt him a little bit, like in versus playing with someone like Moutier. And we already sort of saw some of the repercussions with that, with him missing the 2 lobs that Moutier threw his way. And I wonder, that's kind of my point to watch. Like, can he operate just as well with point guards that are maybe a little bit less effective getting him the ball, though maybe the trade-off there is that he gets a little bit more time with Dennis Smith Jr. and those two develop slightly better chemistry.
I mean, DSJ, sorry, not to interrupt, but DSJ has actually played well with Mitch. I mean, they were developing a pretty good chemistry right before the All-Star break, like kind of akin to how Smith plays with DeAndre Jordan.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Mitch at this point is a pretty similar player, so I do agree, though. I don't think Moutier does much to help Mitch, because Moutier is not the type that's just looking to dish. Like, if Moutier takes a screen from Mitch at the top of the key and gets to the elbow, like, there's as good of a chance or a better chance that Moutier will take a mid-range jumper from the elbow than, you know, look Mitch's way rolling towards the hoop. Like, that's just kind of the player that Moutier is, unfortunately. So, I don't know. I think going forward, like, I don't want to see, like, if Moutier stays on the bench, which here's hoping, and Mitch stays on the bench, I hope that their minutes aren't staggered in such a way that Mitch plays most of his minutes with Moutier, because I definitely don't think that's a good fit for him.
Mm. Yeah, I'm with you. All right, very last point from me. This is the only opportunity I'll ever get to tell it. Great Anthony.
Oh, wait. Yeah, call this what it is. Call it overtime. This is overtime.
Oh, yeah, sure. We are heading to overtime. All right. Anthony Tolliver. So he was on the Phoenix Suns at the start of the, I think it was the 2015-16 season, if memory serves. Might have been 14-15. And all right, so first NBA media day I've ever gotten to go to. I think it was the first like NBA like anything I ever got to go to. So it was pretty cool. I got to interview our guy Alex Jeff Hornacek, who I won't stand for as a Knicks coach. I will stand for as a human being. He's very super nice. But anyways, Anthony Tolliver, another guy I'll stand for as a human being. Just incredibly nice dude. And I think one thing that the casual fan might not totally realize is NBA media days are just insane, and they basically, as evidenced by the fact that I was there, they let in essentially everyone. So I had a college radio show when I was in school with three of my best friends from college, and all four of us got credentials for this thing, and one of them was my friend John, who is from Guam and is known as John from Guam, is also Alex in your vein, just a massive Avengers / Harry Potter / Lord of the Rings / Game of Thrones fan. So I do want to get him on this podcast at some point to talk about that. But his friend, whose name is Rod, or Rod from Guam, his all-time favorite player is Anthony Tolliver, because he used him in 2K for some stretch of time, and apparently Tolliver is just dominant in that game if you figure out how to use him. So John's big idea was, okay, I'm going to get Anthony Tolliver to say happy birthday to Rod and then save it for 6 months and then send it to Rod. And that is exactly what happened. Anthony Tolliver, at an NBA-sanctioned media event, without question, looked into my friend's camera, said, happy birthday, Rod, and called it a day. And then Rod from Guam got the best birthday present of his life about 5 months later. So that is what NBA media day is like. That's the kind of person Anthony Tolliver is. And at least for me, that is the end of this podcast. I have talked all I can about this crummy, crummy game.
Well, I appreciate the the nice heartwarming story about Anthony Tolliver, so I don't have to hate him for being such a nuisance during this game. I will now call him a blessing in this game to, you know, push our tank forward, because really the Knicks are truly facing some stiff competition at this point from the Cavs and the Suns, and it's becoming more apparent that every loss matters, even with a hobbled Zion as the top prize now, although it seems like he's going to be okay. News item from the weekend, Zion busted his shoe up and screwed up his knee, but he's going to be fine, so we can still fantasize about Zion without any caveats. At any rate, let's wrap this one up. Just remember, going forward, if you want to play Locked On Knicks in your car and you have a smart device, be sure to ask your car to play podcast Locked On Knicks, or you can ask your phone to do that, or your home speaker. Whatever you want. Anything that takes voice commands, you can just say, play podcast Locked On Knicks.
Train conductor.
We'll be right there for you. Yeah, your train conductor. Try that. Let us know how it goes. Have an F-bomb tracker. See how many times he curses you out for asking such a stupid question of your train conductor. At any rate, that's it for us today. Thank you guys for tuning in. Enjoy your weekends. We will be back starting this week. And also, keep an eye out for another Fan Friday message. We're still taking submissions. I think we might already be booked for this coming week, but we were so happy with how it went for the first week with Sam that we're definitely going to keep it going and keep bringing you guys on Fridays. So feel free at any time, shoot us a DM at Locked On Knicks, or shoot us an email, lockedonknicks@gmail.com, and put in a submission for that. But yeah, that's it for today. Thank you all for listening. Talk to you soon. Peace.